How do you face milestones in your life? When you come to a significant point, a turning point, or a significant birthday, whether it be turning 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 or whatever it might be, how do you face those times? Is it an excuse for a party? Some nodding going on around there. For a holiday, a getaway? A chance for spending a bit of money for a gift? Is it a time where you ask yourself those questions about where you've been going? Look back and think, how has life been? What's gone on over the last 10 years or 20 years? Or what do I feel I've achieved with my life so far? Or is it one of those points where you ask yourself, where's your life going? Is my life going anywhere? Or perhaps that's just the stuff of midlife crisis, and we won't dig that hole too far. David Reach is a big milestone here as we get to the end of 1 Chronicles 29. We reach this point where David is basically right at the end of his life. We didn't read it, but the very end of 1 Chronicles 29 talks about the death of David. And here we very much have him getting ready to hand over to his son, the king to come. And as Terry was saying a few weeks ago, we get this picture painted for us in Chronicles of things being quite ordered and rosy and working well in the life of the kings. We get this picture for us, the chronicler viewing David and Samuel as kind of the ideal pictures of who the king should be, of what the king should be like. And so we get quite a nice, neat handover. And if you read Kings, you get a slightly different perspective on the story. But here we have things as they should be, this handover from father to son. And we have David at this milestone in his life, coming to the end of his life, coming to this point of handing over to his son, of the legacy that he is leaving. We've been looking over the last 10 weeks or so or more, something of the legacy that David has left that we still enjoy today, his psalms, the example of his life of worship, how that has enriched our own worship and our life following God as we've looked at it over the last few weeks. But we see here something as well of the legacy he's leaving for his son in building this temple. If you look at chapter 28, you can read about David detailing the plans of how his son Solomon was to build this temple. And now very much in chapter 29, it's not just the plans, but it's the pounds. It's the gold that's required to do it. It's a bit gloomy. Petra, could you just click the light on for me? And I can. That's lovely. Thank you very much. Makes all the difference. We see not just the plans, but the pounds. And actually, the figures here of what David gives personally towards the work of this temple being built are huge sums. We don't really know, for us reading about talents of gold isn't very clear, but helpfully if you're looking at the church Bibles, then you'll see in the bottom they've converted those figures into numbers we understand. So it's something like 100 metric tons of gold that David personally gives towards the work of the temple, and something like 235 metric tons of silver that he gives. This is a huge amount that he gives towards this work to be done, the legacy that he's handing on to his son Solomon. And then from his example of his own personal giving and his encouragement for others to give, others, the leaders of the people, come and they give huge offerings as well. He says, now who is willing to consecrate themselves to the Lord today? It's a bit of an odd way of putting it, and it's a bit of an odd way it's been translated, but he's asking them, who wants to come and voluntarily give to this work of God, to the work in the temple here? It's to be a voluntary offering. This wasn't a part of their tithes, the offerings that they had to give, of giving a certain percentage of their income or their crops or the things that they had. This wasn't part of that. This was a free will offering that they could come and give. And we read about them coming and giving willingly and giving with great joy, that this wasn't a reluctance. This wasn't, oh, the king's given so much, the rest of us looks like we've got to go and do something as well. This was coming and giving with real joy and celebration about it. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, page 1164, if you want to find it in the church Bibles. It says something similar. Chapter 9, verse 6 of 2 Corinthians. Remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Each of you should give whatever you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to bless you abundantly, so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. As it is written, they have freely scattered their gifts to the poor, their righteousness endures forever. Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will also supply and increase your store of seed and will enlarge the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. In 1 Chronicles, we obviously have a specific call at a specific time for the building of this temple. 2 Corinthians gives us a much broader picture, a picture for us of the call to be generous with what we have. The Bible has a lot to say about regular and planned giving and tithing and giving away a percentage of what we have. And yes, we should engage in that. We should give regularly to God, be that the work of the church here or other Christian endeavors around the world. And the easiest way for us to do that here is to do it by standing order or by payroll giving, as John was talking about a couple of weeks ago. That actually it's simple for you because it happens, it comes out of your pay or your bank account without needing to work and remember it each week or each month. And it makes it easy for us because it means that no one has to count the money or go and bank checks. It happens nice and simply. We should do the regular things. But we should also voluntarily give as God leads us and God blesses us as he provides for us. We should take those opportunities to give out of the abundance that we find God has given us. We've been talking about significant changes to our buildings here. We've been circling around it for a little while and we're gradually making steps forward. It's not the place to talk about all the detail of that, but if God continues to lead us in that direction, then we're going to need to be a people who in making that decision are ready to joyfully give to the God's work. We need to be a people who are ready and desire to leave a legacy that goes beyond us, to leave something of the legacy people left when they built this building 120 years ago. That we still benefit from today. David left a legacy on to Solomon to build this temple. And it is about this temple. Heard that bit. It is about this temple. It is about the temple being built. And buildings can be significant to us, can't they? Buildings can be significant things for us. We can get a certain attachment to buildings. There's a whole huge amount paid, isn't there? Attention paid to architecture and how buildings are built and how they make you feel when you go into them. They say things like, you know, you buy a house in the first sort of 10 seconds that you walk into it as to the sort of feeling you get as you go into that house. And certainly I know for people who've lived in one place for a very long time, the place where they are, that house that they lived in, can become incredibly significant. Personally, I've never lived anywhere for more than about 6 years in any particular house, so I've never quite had that same attachment. Growing up, I had the principle that if I'd lost something, the easiest way to find it was to wait until we moved house. And then if it was in my room, it would be found at that point. So I didn't have quite the same attachment to buildings. But we can get very attached to buildings and to things, can't we? But there's something bigger here in this chapter of 1 Chronicles than just the building. If we think it is just about giving for a building to be built, for a temple to be built, then we've missed something. We've missed something of what really is going on. Our focus should never primarily be about a building. going on in his prayer, David prays this in verse 16. Lord our God, all this abundance that we have provided for building you a temple for your holy name comes from your hand, and all of it belongs to you. In this huge amount that they do, in this huge amount that David gives personally, that he leads others in giving, as he comes before God, he recognizes that it's not about his own achievement, that it's not about all that he has done, all the people have done, that it all belongs to God, that it all is his. And recognizing that their giving is a reminder of that, that as they give to God, it's a reminder that all they have is his. All they have belongs to the Lord. J. John tells this story. I apologize if you've heard J. John speak. You've probably heard it. But it's a good story, so I'm going to nick it. J. John tells this story that he was at an airport waiting for a flight. And he had a little while to wait. And so he went and he got himself a coffee and a bag of 10 mini donuts. And it was quite busy at the cafe. And so there weren't really any free tables, but he saw there was someone sat at a table on his own. So he went over and he kind of, you know, is a seat free, can I come see? He comes and sits next to this guy, puts his bags down, the coffee on the table, and sits for a minute. The guy opposite him sat reading a newspaper, and then he opens the bag of donuts on the table, takes one out and eats it. And then the guy opposite him, who sat there reading the newspaper, sort of looks over his newspaper, looks at the bag on the table, turns it around, takes out a donut and eats it. And J. John's thinking, what are you doing? And goes back, carries on reading his newspaper. And J. John thinks, so he very deliberately reaches out, turns the bag around, takes out a donut and eats it. And the guy reading the newspaper looks over his newspaper, smiles at J. John, turns the bag around and takes out another donut and eats it. What is going on? What is this guy on? So J. John very deliberately reaches over, and as much as you can aggressively turn a bag around, aggressively turns the bag around, takes out two donuts and eats them rapidly. This goes on for some time until there is only one donut left in the bag. The man with his newspaper takes his newspaper, folds it up, takes out the last donut to J. John's disgust, tears it in half, puts half on the bag, smiles, pushes it over to J. John, eats the other half, and walks away. At this point, he's so angry, he can't bear to sit there any longer. He's not even going to eat the half a donut that he's got left. I've only had about six from his bag. So he picks up his coffee, picks up his bags, and sees by his bag on the floor his bag of 10 mini donuts. God owns all the donuts. It's all his. He allows us to keep the rest. If we get to a milestone, a point in our life, and we look back, and we look back at all that maybe we feel we've done, that we have achieved, that we've amassed, that we have, we need to recognize that it's not about us. It's about what God has provided for us, what he has given, the gifts he's given us, the opportunities he's provided. We should look back. We can look back as people who have sought to serve God, as people who have sought to be good and faithful servants. But it's all come from him. As we look to what kind of legacy we might leave behind us, it's not about us. But it's about the God who provides. We can only leave, we can only do what it is that God gives us. David goes on in his prayer and shows us that this is so much more than just about building a temple. Verse 18 of chapter 29. Lord, the God of our fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, keep these desires and thoughts in the hearts of your people forever. And keep their hearts loyal to you. And give my son Solomon the wholehearted devotion to keep your commands, statutes, and decrees, and to do everything to build the palatial structure for which I have provided. before this building of the temple, before that comes David's prayer that the people will live as their ancestors did, loyal and faithful to God. For his son Solomon, the king to come, that he would live in wholehearted devotion. Yes, that he'd build this temple too, but that he'd live in wholehearted devotion. That's the legacy that he was looking to leave behind. His prayer for those he was leaving behind was that they would live in devotion to God. Perhaps the most obvious legacy that many of us today here may leave behind is that of our own children. What are our hopes and prayers for them? And I mean that for us if we have our own children, our own biological children, or for us as a church, for the children in our church, for all those who've gone out the back this morning. As a church family, what are our hopes for them? For those of you in a wider family, if you've got young children in your extended family, nieces, nephews, whatever, what are your hopes, your prayers for them? Is it that they'll be happy and healthy, that they'll be successful, that they'll marry themselves, that they'll have children, that they'll be wealthy, that they'll own their own home, seems to be the ambition the government wants us all to have, that they'll have a good job? Or is it first and foremost that they'll live in wholehearted devotion to God, that there'll be someone who leads others to come and to worship him? Much easier for me to talk about that before I had my own children, before I became so much more aware of all the conflicting interests, all the struggles, all the difficulties, all the things that concern you, all the things that you are thinking about, and how much harder it is to keep that sense of first and foremost, what is it that I want to model in my own life? What is it that I want to show them as my highest priority? To live in wholehearted devotion to God. Our other reading for this morning, our psalm for this morning was Psalm 72. You can find it on page 586 of our church Bibles. And Psalm 72 is a little bit difficult because we don't quite know who it was written by. With a lot of psalms, you get a little inscription at the start, and it might say who it's written by, a psalm of David, and you might get something of when it was written, maybe the events that were going on, or you might get some really odd words, which we don't really know what they mean, but they were probably a tune or something about how it was to be set or sung, something like that, but that information has been lost. Psalm 72, you may well see that it says of Solomon. And it's not quite clear whether it's saying for Solomon, that this was actually a psalm written by David for his son Solomon, or whether it was a psalm that could have perhaps been written by Solomon or a prayer for him, written by someone else, a prayer for the king. Whichever of those it is, there's a clear emphasis in this psalm of that obedience. It's a prayer for the king, that the king would live in righteousness. Verse 1, endow the king with your justice, O God, the royal son with your righteousness. May he judge your people in righteousness, your afflicted ones with justice. May the mountains bring prosperity to the people, the hills the fruit of righteousness. There's this real desire in this psalm that the king, that the people would act with righteousness and integrity. That the ruler of the people, the king, would look out for the needs of the poor. Verse 4 says, may he defend the afflicted among the people and save the children of the needy. May he crush the oppressor. There's a desire in this psalm that the king would be someone who didn't look out for his own needs, for his own wealth, or just the needs of those who are wealthy or the powerful, but he'd be someone who looked out for the needy, the oppressed, and the poor. If you want a look at what the opposite of it looks like, if you've followed I think it was Panorama who did an investigation into Putin and the allegations against him, that it's thought that on his salary, his official salary of something like £80,000 a year, he's somehow mysteriously amassed a wealth of what's thought to be something like £28 billion, and that he might be the richest man in Europe. It's sort of the opposite of what's being prayed for here. I should say he's accused of that, of course. No one's proved it, just for the recording. Don't know where I'll travel at some point. Anyway, that we can pray for our rulers, for the rulers in this world, that they be people who look out for the needs of the needy and the oppressed. And this psalm seems to follow that actually if leaders do that, if they live righteously, if they look out for the needs of the oppressed, of the poor, of the needy, then actually everything else will follow. Verse 7, in his days may the righteous flourish and prosperity abound till the moon is no more. Even foreign policy follows on. May he rule from sea to sea and from the river to the ends of the earth. There's actually living in obedience, with integrity, with righteousness. The rest of it flows from there. We get this point, this milestone in David's life. He's reached the end of his life. And of course, we know David's life. We know that he made mistakes, that he didn't live perfectly. But we can see that through what he's done, he's drawn people to worship. That he leaves a legacy that we still enjoy today in the Psalms, of a life of worship and devotion to God. That his prayer, his last prayer here, is a prayer that those who follow after him, that his son, would live that life of devotion, wholehearted devotion to God. Is your life going somewhere? Is your life going somewhere? As you face milestones, as you look at the big picture of your life, what do you think? Is it a time that you feel that you need to bury your head in the sand? How do you look to the future? 1 Chronicles gives us quite a dim picture, really, of the state of our life here. Verse 15 says, our days on earth are like a shadow without hope. A shadow without hope, something that comes and goes, that's fleeting, that's gone. That we have a finite life that ends with death. Psalm 72 gives us a slightly different perspective. Psalm 72 verse 17 says, may his name endure forever. May it continue as long as the sun. Psalm 72 is a prayer for the king. But it's a prayer for an earthly king that was never fulfilled in any of the kings of Israel or Judah. They didn't reach up to that ideal that was hoped for, that was looked for. It's an ideal that wasn't reached until Jesus came. Until the king to come was Jesus, the king who will rule forever. He fulfills what's in this psalm that was never met by earthly kings. The king who came to look out for the needs of the poor and the oppressed, who set out his manifesto for us in Luke chapter 4 when he said, the Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. A king who came to look out for the needs of the poor and the oppressed. The temple that David left behind as his legacy for Solomon to build, it's long destroyed, it's long gone. But as we turn to the end of our Bibles, we find that there's an eternal city where God dwells. Revelation chapter 22 gives us this picture of this eternal city where God dwells. And that if we hope in Jesus, if we have Jesus as our king, then that's where our life is going. Our life is going to this place where he dwells. This is how it's described. Then the angel showed me the river of the water of life is clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb down the middle and of the Lamb down the middle of the street of the city. On each side of the river stood the tree of life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. No longer will there be any curse. The throne of God of the Lamb will be in the city, and his servants will serve him. They will see his face, and his name will be on their foreheads. There will be no more night. They will not need the light of a lamp or the light of the sun, for the Lord God will give them light, and they will reign forever and ever. This isn't about escapism. This isn't about escaping the world to somewhere and a pie in the sky, hope for the future. But this is about direction and purpose for life now. That we might live a life that's about bringing glory to God. But we might live a life that's about serving our King forever and ever. That we might live a life of storing up treasures in heaven. That we might see a perspective that goes beyond turning 30 or 40 or 50 or 60. That goes beyond children leaving home. That goes beyond retirement. That goes beyond illness. A perspective that goes beyond even death. And that we might seek to live a life now in obedience to our eternal King. And build a legacy that's for an eternal kingdom. How do you face milestones in your life? Do they make you think about all that you've achieved in some self-satisfied happiness? Do they make you wonder where life is going? And is the end just the grave? Or do you have hope in a God who's provided, who's guided in the years that have gone by, and hope in an eternal kingdom that we can build a legacy for the King who will serve forever. Amen.